think that really is what is a good way to end the segment, is just like saying, telling people, practice, get tips, talk to people about the deck that you're comfortable with, and fine tune it as much as possible. Because if you grind a list and you get the right list out, you're going to be like putting yourself in such a good position before a tournament.
Yo, what up, guys? Welcome to Faded Town, number one Pokemon podcast in the world. These are facts. Look them up a book. Google them. Focus at them. They might not be facts anymore. The uncommon energy one's pretty good. I know that's like, I don't normally say that, but Mazul's kind of holding it down there. Him and Chip are holding it down.
Agreed.
but if you Google it, number one Pokemon podcast, Faded Town, I'm pretty sure it still shows up. So, like, it is what it is. Been gone for, this might be 2 weeks now. A couple stuff happened. As you can see, Rural's not here. And Yesper's here. And Yesper's gonna join us now. We're gonna do Monday shows now, guys. If you don't know Yesper, I know he's kind of been washed. No, I'm just fine. He won, what is it, 2016 world champion in seniors?
Yes.
Perfect. And then he's just been a top player in Europe, so it's nice to bring someone from Europe into the podcast. You know, a different perspective, different meta out there. So that's going to be fun. I got a new job promotion, so I've been adjusting to these hours. Yes, where last time he was on here, he was in school. Now he's teaching. So we're all growing up around here.
Yeah, for sure. Changing a 40-hour school week into a 50-hour work week. Lot different stuff, right. For sure. And I can't skip work like I try to skip school. So those are the major differences in that. But that's, of course, true. Thanks for the invitation to join you on the podcast, of course, and I'm super excited to get in and sharing what I think of what's going on at the moment in the Pokemon CCG.
Right. It's going to be fun, I think. I don't know. Talking Pokemon every week is just fun. I think it helps me personally stay on top of everything, so maybe we'll get you in a day two, you know?
I got that next week, right?
You're right. Well,
at least this time I'll lock myself into a deck pretty early, so...
Yeah.
It's either do or die.
Yeah, right? But yeah, so most likely we're going to have Monday show. I'm working on trying to get another show going throughout the week. I'm not making any promises, but for sure we'll have at least a Monday show for now. Other than that, we have a lot of regionals to kind of talk about. There's a lot going on. So we had Salt Lake, which we're just going to breeze over. I know it was like almost a month ago now. Then we have Lilith, right? And then we have a couple, Indonesia and Malaysia that we'll kind of go over. Even though they were like best of ones, we'll talk about them. But they're still in this meta. And then we have Warsaw, what is still in this meta. I think it's the last tournament in this meta.
It is, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll go into Silver Tempest. We'll talk about kind of our first thoughts on Silver Tempest and what you should probably buy, basically. So let's just jump into Salt Lake. I day two Salt Lake, just so everyone knows. All right, I'm not as washed as I thought I was, but my testing group, We went with Zorark. I just thought the deck hit the numbers. You can draw like 20 cards on turn two, and if you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. And it started off bad. I started 1-1-1, then it got to like 2-2-1, and then I won out. So pretty good. Where my boy Kevin Kenny, he started like 6-0 or something, talking shit the whole time. And that's all. I was like, you know what? No one cares if you go 6-0, man. You have to go 9-0 for anyone cares. But if I make a run back from 1-1-1, that's a better story. So the whole time I was like, redemption story. Don't call it a redemption. I'm just saying. And then every time, and his disappointment on his face, every time I walk over and tell him I won, it was just worth it. It's just worth it. He's like, you get it? I was like, yep. I was like, you ain't got me this time, all right? But he did end up, his day two was a lot better. I don't know. My day two, I didn't play outs to mill tank. I hit 2 mill tanks.
Yeah, he played the Sidjuwainis deck, right? In like double fighting or triple fighting, right? So yeah, he had a pretty good out to Miltank, as well as being able to actually maybe hit a bit of weakness somewhere else.
I don't know. I still don't agree with that. The whole thing, his justification on everything is dumb, and I don't know. I personally just think with Zorak, you play the most consistent list, and you just take auto losses to stupid stuff like Zorak or Miltank and.
Yeah.
Duraludon. Like, you just take the auto losses and just set up perfectly every time and be everything else. That's how I feel. We'll see. We'll see going forward. We're supposedly going to play the same 60s going forward, but me and him can't agree on things, so probably not. He's in the Pablo world, where he's getting coached by Pablo. Pablo's putting these horrible ideas in his head, and we're just gonna let him do that, but it's fun.
I think if you have to hit the same 60 going forward, it's probably gonna be like you both have a list, you throw it into a pod, someone shuffles it, and you pick out a list.
I'm too stubborn. Because I'm such a hard believer that you just don't put basic energy in that deck. I don't think...
No, I'm at the same point. Like, yeah. I'd rather play Canceling Cologne and Silene than I play those base energies. But, like, bro, like, for real, it's like, if you play Canceling Cologne and Silene, at least you don't get another bad starter.
Correct.
That's one of the worst things about it, like, playing the Sidjuwai. It's a shit starter.
It's a shit. It's, oh, it's if you told Kevin that, starter. He'd be mad. He'd be like, dude, you attach to energy, and then it has, like, an attack that, like, searches two cards. So good. And I'm like... And then they just take two prizes. Like, dude, you'd rather have the Zorak, and then you go back into the Diancie, and it's a perfect attack. Like, you want to do that every turn. So, like, I don't know. I don't know. That's shit. Attaching just a fighting energy, that just feels horrible. I'm like, you can't even attack. Like, what are you doing? You didn't play Trekking Shoes. I'm sorry, I'm just shitting on his list right now. He played 3 belts. For what reason? The only thing that you need belt for is Kyurem. Is the only thing you need belt for. And
not even Miyu, no.
No, you don't even need it for Miyu.
Or Oricorium play, you need it.
Yeah. I guess a Miyu with Oricorium, then yeah, you need it. But like technically you don't need it for Miyu. He played 3 belts. I mean, his justification, he thought Kyurem was going to be a lot more popular. I'm like, do you need 3 belts to beat 2 Kyurems? I don't know. But, I don't know. It worked for him. He did better than me. It's hard to argue with him. Like, that's his argument, is like, his record was better. And I'm like, at the end of the day, our 6, we played Zorak list. They're going to do the same thing. He played like 5 different cards that I just felt were less consistent. And I hit 2 mil tanks, and he didn't hit any auto losses. I mean, he hit a lot of... He lost to Reggie's, which that's just a hard matchup. Like, unless you throw, like, a, I don't know, fucking Flying Pika in your deck.
No, then, you need Dunsparce. Dunsparce, Manaphy, in combination. No, if you
you need both.
You need a combination, because if you just play the Dunsparce, you just go Reggie Lucky twice.
Yeah. That's what we determined. We're like, it's not even worth, like, the Dunsparce isn't even worth, because I just do that, and I don't want to play all those stupid Pokemon. No. So, yeah, that's kind of where we sat, going that, but we've seen, basically, Reggie's kind of, well, a lot of the top players played Reggie's. We had Azul, Grant, Caleb, Andrew, Kennett, all make top 8 with Reggie's. Yep. Obviously, they had their Gujo matchup and their Flying Peak match. They're not great. and those two ended up in the finals. Do I think either of these decks are very good? No. Did they have good matchups? In top eight, they had great matchups, and I don't know. I don't know how they got there, but I think the decks, like, they can win, they do well. Does it, like, tell you what they went into day two for with?
No, it does not. But, like, what we can see from the Reggie decks, right, is that, like, inherently Reggie that has struggles with the consistency, right? Because right. you can fall behind so many matchups. Like, even Giratina can pull back and go Roxanne Temple, and it hurts them a lot, especially when they only play free path as the Shadium choices. It's really tough for them to get back from that because they play a path, then they have to discard a path of research, and then we have one path left, and then they get Roxanne templed, and then they could end up losing to that.
Yeah.
What I also think is funny is that, like, the top eight at Salt Lake was quad Reggie, one Palkia, one Tina, one Arc Pika, one Arc Gudra. I think what's funny about it is that you have four Gigas in top eight, and three of them fall.
Yeah.
Like, of course, we do have Fisher and Gudra and Arc and Pika took care of the job. Same did like a Reggie Mirror. So that's like kind of why that three of them only made top eight because those were just inherently bad matches for Reggie. But it is funny that four Reggies makes top cut and three of them, like, two of them plays a bad matchup and the other two are faced against each other.
Yeah. It's tough. It's just like, Azul knew he was going to beat Caleb. Or what? I think he played Caleb, yeah. He's we were standing there, he goes, did I make top eight? And I was like, yeah. He's like, who am I playing? I'm like, okay. He's like, I got this. But they're testing partners, I assume that he knew something. So,
yep.
That's kind of how that went down. Yeah, I don't know. There's not a lot to take from this tournament, other than, like, there's a lot of decks that can win. I went into it thinking, like, there isn't a deck in the top eight that I was like, there isn't a deck in, like, the top that made day two that, okay, maybe Vikavolt. I don't know. Other than, like, Vikavolt, which, I don't know.
We saw Easter Solstice deck with
that too. Region,
right?
Yeah, helped him with that deck.
Not a big support of it, but it sort of makes sense in many ways, but he's correct. Simply just playing a too much of an inconsistent deck, really,
yeah.
At points. But to be honest, like, speaking in general, that the meta in Salt Lake City was kind of, like, descriptive of a very varied meta in mm-hmm. ways where the bottom lower half of the day two would be more of these linear decks, like Kyurem Palkia, Zoroark right. itself, maybe some Lost Zone Diago, which has some consistency troubles as well. Arceus Mewtwo. We did have to Vikavolt, but that's where, like, you know, once you have something that's, like, almost classified as a rogue, but Vikavolt's not even rogue. It's more like a known archetype, but once you have something that's surprising, people in day two know how to play against it. And I think that's where they struggle usually. That's also why they finished 89th as the last spot in day two. And then we just had, like, a really compact meta. I think, actually, overall, I changed this to compact meta because, like, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 different decks spread between 89 people. I don't think that's very varied when you have 19 Palkia, 12 Reggies, 15 Arceus decks, 10 Mews, 10 Giratinas, and 11 Kyurems. I don't think that's showing much variation, but it's also showing where we are currently in our game, where the variation isn't that well represented because that the top 3, 4, 5 decks are so strong in himself.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, when I look at day two, if you count out Sosa and you count out this Vika and maybe this Mewtwo, Arc Mewtwo, and Dialga, I guess, I wouldn't be surprised if any of these decks won. That's how, like, the meta feels is, like, any of these decks could win. And personally, I kind of just think if Azul's group or like, top players play any of these decks, I think they'll have more representation in the top. top cut. I think all these decks are good enough to win a tournament, which is kind of fun to watch. Like, there isn't, it isn't like an ADP meta, or when we, I don't know, last few formats, it's been a lot of Palkia just dominating. But then, I don't know, it's kind of, there's the triangle kind of thing, and here it's, there's more like five, six decks that could win, which is cool.
Yeah, I think you're hitting into Pentagon of decks here. Yeah. And I think that's definitely more healthy than a triangle of decks that we had in the past couple of formats. I don't, like, you can, all the way back to even ADP, you could say there's still a triangle between like ADP, Senni Scorch, and some Furt deck, right?
Yeah.
At that point. So I think the game is a bit more healthy now, and I think that ends with Sylvan Tempest, but that's a bit of a foreshadowing because, of course, we're talking current format, and we'll be ending off with the Silver Tempest thing. But I think, like, the way that Salt Lake City was supposed to impact Lille in Europe, which was played a couple weeks ago, I thought that was going to be a lot bigger. I thought it, that the Reggie hype was going to carry a bit on, but also that the Lille tournament, pretty much once you slide into that on Limitless, right, it was really weird, but it was still like Kyurem, Arc Giratina, which had its huge showing this time. It wasn't showing up as much in SLC, but it proved to itself to be a really strong deck during Lille with multiple day twos and stuff like that. Then you also had, of course, Giratina, Palkia, but then you had Blissey in finals versus Genesect. That was, versus Mew, and that was really surprising. But, you know, when Nico doesn't pack an answer to Mew, a hard answer to Mew like Drapion was, and when the guy just coasts around Drapions, then yeah, of course you can win the tournament with Mew for sure.
That's how I felt like when we went, when we looked at this, I was like, I don't think Nier played Drapion. I just think you, because like, I think Salt Lake was full of Drapion. The more I look at deck lists, I think a lot of people just tech Drapion because it just gives you. Like, I almost put Drapion in my deck because, like, I already have a good matchup versus Mew, but if I put Drapion, I cannot lose. So, like, in my head, I was like, man, should I just do it? But then I was like, why? Like, it's not great and into any other deck, so, like, I shouldn't. But, yeah, I just think Europe didn't play it. And, again, Mew's a great deck. It's consistent. It does the same thing every game, and it puts out a lot of damage, and it's going to win if you don't tech for it. So
yeah,
I mean the Blissey is kind of the same thing. Like, how many people played outs to Miltank?
Well, a ton of people did have outs via them playing Lost Box, but it ended up being a non-factor because that Blissey was just so good against Lost Box. Like, Blissey takes in a hairly really bad matchup versus Giratina, where I think Giratina is going to have a lot more showing at the next regionals. But I think that in terms of Lille, the timing of Blissey was the right one, but you can also see that the timing of, like, the Drapion, you remember back in the day we had the Decidueye chart, as we called it, for when you have to play Decidueye at a tournament, depending on how many plays, like Aegislash, that was GX, no, that was Aegislash V, how many played Aegislash V and how many didn't, because that was dependent on how much Decidueye you could even play at a tournament. It's the same with Drapion, right? The amount of Drapion drops, and every time I play a tournament with a Drapion on my deck, I'm thinking, like, bro, this is dead for, like, 8 rounds. Why should I even play it? But then it's like, if you just hit that 1 or 2 Mew in a tournament, and that's why I'd play Drapion next week myself, if you just hit that 1 or 2 Mew, it's just going to pay so much dividends, whereas if you already have a 60-40 against Mew at the least, you shouldn't play Drapion. But if you have a 50-50 or less, you probably should play Drapion in a meta that contains Mew at least for 10%. If 10% of your meta is Mew, go ahead and play Drapion, because it's also really good out to, for example, Mewtwo Stall, which also saw a lot of play in Lille. Of course, the day two chart has not been updated due to Tournament Center being really slow with their stuff, but Drapion is also, like, a really good attacker once it comes to, like, the 190. It's a pretty sweet number to hit, totally. And if you're playing 60 in your deck, you can hit 190. You can work in some cute stuff and techs, right? But I think that coming into next weekend in Wausau with the last tournament of the format, and it's probably also going to be Mew's last hurrah, I don't see Miu continuing after this. To be honest, like Drapion,
really?
we all thought Drapion's going to be the death of Miu. It wasn't, but I do think that Lugia is going to like put a salt lid on it, because like it's going to be so hard for Miu to hit through V Guard energy. First of all, like this beast of a thing can play four path in its deck, Marnie, Roxanne, V Guard energy, and one shot Miu.
True.
How do you beat that?
I don't know. It's gonna be a wild. It's such a. We'll get into it, but the more I look into those cards, or it's not. It's just the how many different special energies we have in the format right now makes those Archaeopses actually more insane. So, but we'll jump in that later. But going into obviously Miu won there. We have Blissey. I don't think that's going to affect Warshaw. I don't think people are going to go, I'm going to play Miu, I'm going to play Blissey.
No.
I think your good players are going to stick with Giratina's. I think Giratina overall is the safest pick, as in, like, it has really good matchups into most things. And its consistency is better than Reggie's.
Yep.
That's like, don't get me wrong, Reggie's probably has the best matchup spread of any deck. It's just, it bricks itself. It's like playing Greninja back in the day. It bricks itself and you just lose. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not as bad as Greninja consistency wise, but we're getting close to it. Yeah. But yeah, I think like, overall, like if you play Reggie's and you take your matchup spread, you just like minus 5% every matchup, right?
I agree.
Because of your breaks. But if you take that into account, I think then Giratina becomes the deck with the strongest matchup spread overall. Simply just because you have this big tanky guy that could take one shots on everything via its V-Star attack, but you can also play as a Lost Box deck.
Correct.
So I think like you having that sort of hybrid deck that Giratina really actually is, is going to be so helpful towards you reaching such a good standing in the meta. And as well as your Reggie matchups ain't even that bad, because as we talked about before, with like people playing Reggie, like, they throw out a path, they play one, and then you go Temple Roxanne.
Yes.
They can't really much cover for it, other than like being lucky that they don't have to like discard a path at some point, because they really need to play the research.
Correct.
And if path stuck under a hand, they got to discard it.
Yeah.
And when they end up discarding it, it just ends up being so much better for the guy playing Temple. Which,
yeah.
I think Giratina's like the only deck that can play Temple in this format, which is also correct to do because of Wash Energy and then Reggie's on the side. But
mm-hmm.
I think that Reggie can still be a good pick for the people who dare to do it. But for people who wants to have a consistent showing, I don't think Reggie's going to be the play.
Yeah, I agree. If everyone's on board with the Giratina playing Roxanne Tempo, it's Reggie's not great because it doesn't have an answer to that. Obviously, I don't know. They don't play a lot of like hands disruption either. So it's like you draw so many cards with Giratina, the Lost Box, your hands get huge. You're going to be able to make that play. That play is going to be there. And
yeah,
It's just dependable
on how the game went pre the Roxanne. Like,
yeah.
It depends on how the game, like, price sport.
Oh, yeah.
Before the Roxanne, and dependable on how hard the Reggie hits the Roxanne. Because if he just hits the Roxanne with research into path, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But what Giratina does is that Giratina could take two prizes easily itself by shredding. And then you're like, if you can just reach these sort of equal prize rates or Giratina for most of the game with Giratina itself, Snorlax, and so on and so forth, you're going to be able to Roxanne Temple, hopefully yourself, into a very good spot. And that's where Tina can capitalize. And the game versus Reggie for Tina, if Tina wins a game, it's either going to be a win or a tie.
Correct.
And most likely a tie, because that game takes around like 27 and half an hour.
Yep.
And I do know, you can time that perfectly while playing.
Yeah, it's one reason I would never play a one prize deck. Like, you have to win, or you just tie.
Yeah, because if you lose game one with Reggie, and even if Lost Box, you're like kind of either looking at a tie or just a loss.
Yep, that's
and
it.
it's not even like playing slow if your game takes 35 to 40. Because the games are just so intense, and like playing Lost Zone decks are just like so decision heavy focused that you have to like not make any dumb decisions on Lost Zoning with Call Rest, with Comfy, playing like Lost Zone the wrong card of Lost Vacuum, because that those cards don't come back. And when they don't come back, it's that much harder, because then you can recover them or Rod, Palpat, etc. So that's also why that these slower decks are kind of like a hurdle in the way that we have our format right now with best of 350. I don't think we can like solve that without having to play best of 360 in Swiss rounds, but I don't think that's something that the organizers would like to. And that's a whole separate problem. I think we can never even have a single episode on.
Yeah, I agree. Like, there's a lot of that. I kind of want to touch into stuff like that. We were talking about it before the podcast. We'll talk about it right before the tempo thing. But going to a Warshaw thing, your safe bet is your Giratina.
Yeah.
And then everything else kind of falls in line. I think anything could win. I wouldn't be surprised if any deck won. Other than like if some like Tord comes up with some crazy like I don't know. Lost box, crazy. Because to be honest, we didn't really get much time to mess around with stuff. I think there's been a lot of time now. So like, if something crazy was to come out, this would be the time. There's no if there is something crazy out there that is playable, you're gonna see it now or you're never gonna see it. Like, it's just how that's gonna work. But yeah, I would go Giratina. Well, I personally would just play Zora because the deck just doesn't. I'm brain dead, just gonna do that. But if I was recommending, I'd play Giratina. If you're super comfortable with the Inteleon engine, I think that deck's super busted. Like,
yeah, I do also feel that Palkia is like one of the most safer picks. Last week we had Fabien Robin playing it today too. The Palkia deck, like, it was just a deck that they picked up. Like, they were like, well, we're not comfortable with anything else. We just go back to Palkia, right?
Yeah.
Palkia is, like, for these upper players, is a safe pick because once you know about the Inteleon engine, what to find, these plays are already in your mind and you're able to get yourself into them. So I think, therefore, like, Palkia is always a safe pick for most of these players, whereas some players are more, like myself, are more comfortable with like a Lost Zone type of engine where you fin your deck a bit more than the Inteleon engine does and is a bit less weak versus Roxanne, right?
Yeah.
Because like myself, I'm really hung up on trying to make my deck as most consistent as possible from start of the game to the like the facing end of the game. And that's what I feel, for example, Lost Box Engine can do, where people would be, well, if I just get out a couple of solvables with AP passes with Palkia, then I have my game plan solved. So it's different mentalities or playstyle way of getting there. But I think the two most safe decks for the tournament is going to be Giratina and Palkia in both their own ways. Mm-hmm. I think those are going to be the one that we see most of the top players head towards. I'd also include the Lost Zone Engine in that. But I think those two free decks within that are going to be the safe picks. And then we're going to have people, of course, showing up for Kyurem. We saw a lot of them in Lille, and I think that's going to carry on to Wausau. And then we also saw Mew, which is going to have its same showing around about the 7% to 10% mark. It's going to be Mew in the room. And then we have Blissey and Solrak as the sort of like outsider tier 2 decks.
Yeah, I agree. I think I've said this a lot. Like, if you've just been playing the Inteleon engine, you know what you're doing, then that's probably your best bet. But if you don't play the Inteleon engine, do not try to just pick it up and play it. It's not going to go well. I personally tried to do that in Baltimore. 0-3 dropped. Just went home, all right? And it's literally the most, like, embarrassing tournament of my life because, like, I don't know if I talked about this, but there was like a point in the tournament where like, or it was like the first game of the tournament, and I needed an energy, and I was like, played the drizzle on the go, and I already played one bucket earlier, so I have two buckets left, and I have Melanie. I'm like, all right, I'll get one of those. Prize both buckets and Melody. I'm like, all right. I just lose. I'm like, oh, this sucks. And so I don't know what I grab. I just grab whatever. I pass. And then it's my turn again. And I don't do anything. I pass. It's my turn again. And I play a drizzle. I flip my deck over. There's a fucking training court.
Yeah.
And I'm like, exactly. I'm just dumb. And I don't deserve to be. I shouldn't be playing this deck. I don't know what's in my deck. I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm like, it's because I don't play the Intellion engine, and I didn't play the deck enough. So, again, play what you're comfortable with at most. Like, that is the best advice. Like, I don't care if you're rooming with Tord and he's got this crazy list. You shouldn't play it. You should play what you've been practicing, what you're good with. And if you're not practicing, go ahead and play because you really don't care. But if you care, play what you practice and do well. I committed to Zorak like a month before Salt Lake. I grinded like the entire, I filled my entire PTCGO ladder or whatever, played like a bazillion games, and then I go in the tournament day two. It's just, I feel like I did that. Every time I do well at a tournament, it's because I put a lot of effort and time into a deck, and I understand the deck. The matchups, you just got to know the matchup spreads. You're not going to get dumpstered by everything. If you're not going to get dumpstered by everything, figure out your deck and then you'll be fine. Like, don't overthink this too much.
I do agree with that sentiment because, like, if you have a deck you're comfortable with, you automatically know your game plans versus most of matchups anyways. Like, I can share this story about the Tord thing. I've been on both sides of it, right? Back in the 2018 season, I was playing Sorg all along, like everybody else in my testing group. We're playing different variants of Sorg all season. Fine, because if you're switching a deck last moment, make sure it's at least like an archetype that you're safe with, right?
Yeah.
At least it has to be within the archetype that you practice a lot with. I switched a day or two before OCIC. I switched in from Sorg Lycanroc to Sorg Guardi. That was all fine because it was still a Sorg engine. Still, basically, your first returns to the game are still the same.
Yeah.
And then you just have to learn a couple of new stuff, which can be done in a day.
Yeah.
But if you're drastically changing your deck just a few days before tournament, you're going to do bad.
Yeah.
Unless you're in a really privileged position where you can grind out with every single deck in a format, but that's not feasible.
Or you get like super lucky. Like a lot of people, there are people that like post on Twitter, oh, I've never played a hand with my deck and I got day two. I'm like, you got lucky. Like, at the end of the day, it's not because the deck's like insane. It just worked out for you. I just don't recommend that, you know.
But if we're looking at consistency wise, if we're looking at it being statistically correct, if we're looking at like all the things that you can do in your favor without like taking into account, of course, you can brick, do all sorts of stuff, you can get unlucky, throw out Roxanne, stuff like that. You should just be playing something you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
On the other side of that story where I switched from Sorg Lycanroc to Sorg Guardi, had success, ran a really good OCIC, made day two, top 32, yada yada. I had the other side later that season where I played Granbull. I had never played a single hand of Granbull ever in my life before that tournament. And then people packed tons of Alolan Muk. I played versus 5 Soraks containing Alolan Muk, and I had the worst day of my life. So, you know, just get comfortable with the deck you're playing. Yes. If you like, what I always tell people, whether I'm coaching, whether I'm giving tips outside, whether I'm like talking to them, just like at tournaments or whatever, play something you know.
Yeah.
Because like automatically, if you play a ton of games, a hand that looks bad, so, like just at some point looks like a handful of opportunities for you. And that's like the really most important thing that you have is that you can look at a hand and be like, my options are X, Y, C, instead of you just playing that for the first time and being like, my options are none because this is not perfect.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if you're playing a Lost Box deck or anything playing VIP Pass and you don't start, VIP Pass and you give up straight away because you don't know the answers, because you haven't practiced, right, or you haven't gotten tips from people who played the deck, or you haven't been coached, or whatever that can help you set up for that tournament. So it is really important that, especially leading into like even Warsaw, but even just like Brazil, we had 2 weeks to practice our Lugia decks.
Yeah.
You have to just grind as much as you can to make sure you get there.
Yeah. And like some of the way I kind of look at it, you get like we talk about matchup spread a lot and like percentages a lot. But the one thing people always keep out is like, I think you could give yourself like a 5 to 10% up crease on winning matchups based off that you know your deck and your opponent doesn't know the deck. As like, if I played Jesper and he was playing Gramble and he doesn't know what he's doing, like I don't like I should probably still win because he don't know what he's doing. Like even though like my matchup should be worse, but hey, he doesn't know what he's doing. How many people in the tournament don't know what they're doing? And if you know what you're doing, I think that's almost just better than having a good matchup spread. Like, if you know your deck and you went to a tournament where no one knew their deck, you would probably win the tournament. So just know your deck. Just know your deck. Like,
yeah, and I think it's the same if you play 10 Night March mirrors against me, I win 9 of them.
Like, yeah,
correct. It's about comfortability and the experience. I think the experience outlies every single matchup spread ever. Because if you experience, you know all the way and all the sort of different options you have throughout the tournament you can have versus any deck. So leading to Warsaw, that's definitely my advice heading on there.
Yeah, because like I listen to all these podcasts, and that's one thing I do too as a player is I take in a lot of information. That like we live in a really crazy era right now where there's a ton of information on Limitless. There's online tournaments all the time. There's a ton of creators creating content every day. Just soak it all in, take it all in. But at the end of the day, like, I listen to people shit on Zorak all the time. But in my head, I've played so many games with Zorak that I just know they haven't played as many games as me. So, like, when they say this is a horrible matchup, I'm like, in my head, I can already think, well, you have outs here, here, and here. Where they probably don't even, like, they played it, like, once, like, oh, I didn't get the perfect fucking setup, so the deck sucks. But, like, that's how that works. So, like, if you are a Blissey person, which, you can listen to this podcast all day, I'm going to tell you Blissey's a horrible deck, and you shouldn't play it, and, like, it's not good. It lives and dies off Mill Tank. But you could be grinding Blissey this whole time and go, dude, I don't think so. Like,
I'd actually disagree with you because I just recently started playing Pokemon Live on my phone. And the only deck you get that is real and pretty good on the ladder is actually Blissey, which you can start off with. You actually get a starter deck Blissey.
Do you?
Which you only need a couple of cards to change.
That's true.
An actual real good Blissey list. So I've been grinding ladder with that, and like out of like my first 40 games, I lost 5.
Oh, that's not
so
bad.
I'm 35-5 of Blizzy, right? So that just shows you like practice and knowing your matchups and comfortability and grinding and gives results in the end. Yeah.
At the end of the day, I think like practicing something is just more important. Everyone's going to put their tier list out, and like, just because Celio says that your deck is D tier and XY, like, doesn't mean your deck sucks. Again, we just went through this whole, like, thing of, like, we looked at every day two in Salt Lake, and we wouldn't be surprised if any of those decks won. So, like, again, we're in a kind of meta where, like, everything is pretty good. Like, there's nothing that's, like, horrible. If your deck can make day two, it could probably win the tournament. So,
don't overthink this. As long as you're just covering your matches fine, having 50-50s across the board, etc., you're going to be fine leading into almost every single tournament. And I think that really is what is a good way to end the segment, is just like saying, telling people, practice, get tips, talk to people about the deck that you're comfortable with, and fine-tune it as much as possible. Because if you grind a list and you get the right list out, you're going to be like putting yourself in such a good position before a tournament, especially if you get tips from people like myself, for example. That's what I do for almost a living. Like, I do for half my living is giving coaching, people great advice on how should play a deck. And like, I don't do coaching just for the money. I do really just to like spread advice and make sure that people can play their best of tournaments, really.
Yeah. And always down below in the description, there's a list of Pokemon creators and resources to look at. So I always put that in my description.
Yep.
All right, so now that we're done with that, we kind of moved through Warsaw. Good luck next week. What do you know what you're playing? Are you playing Giratina?
I am playing Giratina. I can say that for sure. Yeah. Like, I
Your tier lists are like so different, so it doesn't really matter what you say. Yeah,
yeah, it doesn't really matter. There's a lot of personal choices you can make in the list. But like after I played Snorlax Lost Box, which I think was a decent pick for little regionals, I played a heavy Snorlax line, for example, expecting a lot more Lost Box in my direction, which was like kind of why I played Snorlax, right? But it ended up not going that way. I had covered my matchup sort of, but like the combos you had to make with the deck were lesser consistent than the usual, and as well as just having bad luck. And that just happens in this meta. Like, it was only one win away from points, for example. So I think it's still going to be all right. Like, I played out the tournament after I was out. And, like, what I also like to advise people is that once you're at a tournament, just play it out. It doesn't, like, bottom tables, of course, is not the same practice as upper tables. That's, you can't deny that. But I think just getting more games in a tournament setting is actually really healthy, no matter what deck you're playing the tournament, no matter if you decide, well, I'm not going to play this pile of crap anymore. I think the most important thing is just to get as many tournament games under your belt, because it's so important that you get that practice in just a tournament environment, because it also learns you how to play the clock. It also learns you like how to like anticipate opponents, play a psychological game. Like, there's so many things around that that's to be said about that.
Yeah, I agree. And most of the time, if you did put in the effort and you played a deck that you're comfortable with, you're gonna be in the chase most of the tournament to get to that 6-2-1. So odds are you're not gonna go 0-3. So again, just put in the effort.
I put my money on me not going 0-3. I'm pretty right. comfortable with the I picked between 57 to 59 on my deck already. So I'm pretty comfortable with me not going 0-3 at that
tournament. That's good. All right. Let's kind of jump into... before we jump into Silver Tempest, because that's like kind of going to be fun to talk about, but let's kind of talk about some things that are not so fun to talk about, which is tournament prizing and points and stuff. I think this has been a topic on Twitter a few times, and we kind of just brush over it a lot because, like, odds are it's not going to change. But I think if we don't talk about it, it won't ever change. And if we look at, let me just bring it up real quick, and so we can know, so I'm not making stuff up as we go, but.
Yeah, I can tell you that currently, you told me about this as well. You made day two at SLC. Correct. You got top 128. But the thing about it was that people who didn't even play in the day two also got one top 128. So essentially, you wasted your time playing those six Swiss rounds.
Correct.
Now, Azul has also said on the Uncommon Energy podcast that there should be some compensation just for at least making day two. I'm not saying you should receive more money, perhaps, for top 128ing in a tournament where you made day two. But I do think that you some way should be compensated, whether that's cash or whether that's product. You should be compensated for at least making day two. Just like half a box more, at least, if not like plus 10 CP. Like, it would at least make it a lot better for you to like have the incentive for making day two instead of being like, well, I might just as well 6-3 because I don't feel comfortable with day two meta. Like, right now, the 6-2, I feel 6-2-1 is healthy because it makes way for you to be able to brick and then have a bad matchup and then tie a game which you shouldn't tie.
Yeah.
That's why they have it and change it from 7-2. But I feel that right now it's super bad that these tournaments are getting so big and Pokemon still not being able to properly compensate players for actually having a really good showing. Like, if you top 128, you're still in the top 10%.
Yes. Easily. Let me just kind of break this down. I'm looking at the money. This is the prize pool for the money. If it's 1 to 24 players, which I don't know, why is this up here? Why do we have a breakdown for 1 through 24 players? In what world is there only ever going to be 24 players?
Junior, seniors.
Yeah, I guess. Like, sure.
And but they're always around like 50 or 60 at every regional, so that doesn't even matter.
Even if they were, I don't know, like, we should just have a different table for juniors and seniors, because at this point, we're breaking thousands, and the only, like, up, it goes to 200. So once we get to 200, it maxes on the prize payout. And only up to top 32 get money, which is $250 if you get to top 32 of a 1,000-man regional. Get out of here. That's insane. That's insane because, like, you're in the crazy percentile at that point, and, like, you're not... Even the $250, like, doesn't pay for your flight, basically. Your flight and hotel don't even get paid for that.
In Europe, it pays the flight, plus more.
Cool story. But yours is a little harder, because that's like... I guess you get there. Never mind. Top 32, yeah. Well, there's 500 people. Yeah. Well, cool story for you, but... We have 1,000, and, like, my average flight, and I fly, like, the cheapest you can get. It's probably, like, $100 to $200 is, like, the cheapest round-trip flight to, like, anywhere.
Yeah.
You throw a hotel on that for 2-3 days, you're, that $250 isn't getting you anywhere. And that's saying you come in top 32, which is no, like... You're not a slouch. You come top 32. You did pretty. That's pretty good showing, especially at a regional.
That's top 1/3.
Yeah,
and not more than 1/3. It's actually like.
Correct. Yeah. No. It's like.
Not even.
I don't.
It's 3%.
Yeah, like my math skills. I don't even want to get into it, but like we need more money here, and then like I mean $5,000 is great for first. Like the prize at the top's okay. To be honest, I think we, for regionals at this point, it should almost just jump to the way internationals are priced out money-wise.
I don't think I'd agree with that because internationals are much more competitive than regionals, but...
I think internationals should be more...
Yeah, too. They should be like 15K.
Yeah, yeah, like I think they should go up. I just think we should start a regional... At 10K, and then internationals pay out to top 64 up $500. If you did that, I think you pay out a whole like 32 more people, and you're paying them double the money. I don't think it'd be so much better. I think this prize pool looks and feels better. 64 is like a kind of good step.
What money was like? Would it make sense for you to like pay $250 to top 64, then like have the prices jump a bit down, and then first place get like $7,500? That will be like in a business case for Pokemon, that is not that much money to have to slouch on. And you have to remember, Pokemon doesn't fund these regionals as much as it did before. Like these prize structures haven't changed since mid 2017. Of course,
no.
The game has grown not like a bit. It has grown exponentially since then. Like back then, we could still have regionals of 300. Now, 300 is a dream. You're not going to reach 300 ever. Like you're going to have 500 at least man regionals, 600, and in the US, you're going to have these 800,000-900,000 man regionals. So I think I can even use the word stupid at this point to not like incentivize your players to have a really, really tough, good competitive scene where people actually get compensated for the talent.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're at right now. Because if you, for example, up internationals to 15K for winning, if you up and then you just jumped, like if everything just jumps a bit down, like 64 gets to 32 money, etc., and you just bump up the first place money, for example, at internationals, second place will then get 10K, for first place will get 15, regionals...
Like
first place would get $7,500, second place would get $5,000. I think that'd be a fair case, and it's not that much more money that Pokemon has to give out. And I think that's a good way to start.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's where it should end, because Pokemon is getting more and more popular with time, and there's going to be way, way, way more players, at least in a Masters division.
Correct.
I think at that point, I think you should upgrade, and you should like put in a lowest amount of players for a prize payout that would then jump up to that. Like, at least if you have like 600 in your division, I think it should be 7,500 for a champion.
Yeah, I think we need a whole another row. Because right now, like, we're at 200 or more players. There needs to be a 600, an 800, or like a 1,000. You break a 1,000, we need an up on everything, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this 200 mark, that's cool back in 2017 when Salt Lake got 300 players. Like, okay, we made it past the threshold. We were thinking that going into Salt Lake, oh, it's like West Coast is usually smaller regionals. They sell out. They got over 1,000 people in Masters for Salt Lake. So, like, this isn't changing. They're only going to get bigger. So maybe it's an adjustment that happens next year because now they can see the numbers. Because if you look at the numbers probably from the years, 2019, 2018, this probably isn't that bad. But if you look at the numbers now and then look at this, it looks really bad for the game. So hopefully they take in consideration maybe next season, or mid season. That would be, I don't know how I'd feel mid season. Cause then
I don't think they should do mid season because they should just take a huge dump on players. So actually do one of reasons like towards going to be like, well, then I lost out on 2,500. Like, I think they should do seasonally changes, of course, to that. But I do think that at some point they had, like, of course, before next season, or they have to already start doing that now and, like, have their meetings about it, etc.
Yeah, I agree.
Have to start talking about the prize money because people end up being compensated. We're not going to say that people have to be professional.
No.
Like, we don't have to, like, have too many people being professional in this game, but we just need a bigger chart.
That's all. We need a plus 500 and like plus 1,000, and up the prize pool that way. Because at the end of the day, what's your registration fees in Europe?
A little bit less than US, but almost same.
It's almost we're at like 60
euro.
Yeah, we're at like $70, which is like same shit, but that's like crazy. Like right now, like me in 2017, I probably don't go. Like I probably don't. Like I don't think it was worth it. Like why pay that much money? And like who knows how good I'm gonna do? But like obviously now financially, I'm stable. I'm doing a lot better in my life, and I don't really care. But like $70 to play in a tournament is kind of insane. Like I literally had to sell my playmat and my card that they give you to get.
Yeah.
I got like $55 for that, and I'm like, I feel better now because now my registration was like $20, which is fine. But that's saying you get that because, like, I don't know, here in the U.S., that we run out of that stuff real quick. So
yeah, we don't in Europe, but I think you can make the case of like if you compare to like game like a poker tournament, right? Yeah. If you play a WSOP, you have eight, like, let's just say in a WSOP tournament, you have 1,000 people, like just regionals. The top 10% is going to be paying out.
Yeah.
If not more, if not a little bit more. And then you have a little bit about, like, the first payout row is going to be like about a buy-in. But you can see here already, right? If you pay the top one, like 10% out of 1,000 people, you're going to be paying out top 100 money. Let's just say that. But you can't make it that clear because you can't have that cut because we do cuts by 8.
Yeah.
Or we do cuts by 2 and then double.
I almost feel like if you just make that 2, you should get your money back. Get your $70.
Either that, but that money goes directly to organizer. The money like you get for registration is separate from the money you get paid out by Pokemon stuff. Because Pokemon pays, you pay to the organizer, and they still have to rent, pay staff, and so on and so forth. I understand those costs for sure, but I think that they should at least like bump the pay at least one time. Because I don't feel that you should be paid for a top 120 performance.
No.
I don't. But I do think you should get more product than you're doing right now, which is basically dollars.
The product goes out to 64. So if you get top 64, you get 18 packs.
Yeah. So what I'm saying, bump it.
Yeah.
Bump it by one.
Yeah, I think I'll bump in both directions, money wise and pricing. Sounds good. I don't know. I like the tiers. Maybe if we do get to 1,000, man, we can pay out to 128. I don't think that's unreasonable.
No, me neither, but I think, like, for to make the case, you know, a bit more realistic, what you could hope for at the first moment is that they would bump by one.
Yeah.
I think that's the most realistic thing, that it'll bump to one, and I think they should start doing that at 600 or 550 or 500. 500 is around something like that. Let's do it at 500.
Yeah,
because I understand if you have a regional at 400 people right now, the pay is 200. I understand if you have a regional at 400 and you pay the top 32, you pay the top 64, it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
But if you have 500 or 600 and you pay the top 64, then it suddenly makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I think that's good on that, but I think that's something, because a lot of people are complaining about different stuff, and I think that this is a bigger issue than most of the stuff people are complaining about, especially when you express the cost of things nowadays is a lot higher.
Yeah.
And let's be real, Pokemon's not hurting out money, all right? So,
no, it's a multi-billion dollar company we shouldn't forget. And like with the inflation crisis we have in Europe, for example, right now, people's tied on money. Like, I'm lucky I still live at home, because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to travel to tournaments myself, because otherwise I need to pay rent.
Really?
I do still think I could be able to go to tournaments.
Yeah.
Thank God, 50-hour work weeks. But I still think that it's unfair to many points that Pokemon doesn't see that it's a good way to promote this game. And if you're promoting this game by being nicer to your players, if you're promoting this game by being better at, like, getting a competitive scene. Of course, the competitive scene is not what makes the money at the end of the day for Pokemon at tournaments. It isn't. Tournaments are a losing game for them. But what they can gain off it is people playing. And the media attention that the tournament gets and so on and so forth is invaluable to Pokemon. Because then people look like, oh, Pokemon's cool again. We'll start buying Pokemon. That turn up to dollar signs at Pokemon's office.
Correct. It's all...
So they don't get the money directly, but they get them indirectly by influence.
Correct. Yeah, I agree. So that's kind of want to leave it on that. That's what I'm going to leave it on my... Well, give us some more pricing, all right? But if I make day two and my roommate doesn't make two, we shouldn't get the same points either, all right? Give me some more points, all right? Or... everybody in 128 makes day two or something, all right? So,
but then you have the hard cuts, which is like what people kind of want the system for.
Yeah. It is what it is. We'll see. But let's talk about Silver Tempest and then we'll get out of here. Silver Tempest.
That's gonna be a quick segment.
Yeah. There's not a lot of great cards, but there is some really good cards. A small pile of cards that just make the game a little, like Pram said, look at the mascot on the box and play that. So we have Lugia. If you don't know what Lugia does, it's V-Star, lets you get two colorless Pokemon from your discard pile, put it on your bench. It just happens to be a really good colorless Pokemon that is also printed in this set. Which is Archeops, which says you can get two special energies from your deck and attach them to your Pokemon in any way, which means you can do up to four special energies a turn onto your Pokemon any way you'd like, which makes... and they're also giving us more special energy, which is a barrier energy, which, thank God, it doesn't stack. Because if it stacked, I think that there would be no chance... The deck would just be so tanky, it'd be unstoppable. But we get the barrier energy, which is 30 less for Vs. And what's its attack? 220?
Which?
Lugia's attack is 220, right?
Yeah, but you can just pile some powerful energies on it.
So with choice bands, 250, powerful energies, three powerful energies, maybe four... You're doing, what, three... You're knocking out anything. You're knocking out anything.
Just Just two of them, you're hitting the 290.
290.
Which is like covering, you're covering Arc, you're covering everything.
You're covering everything but, what, Mew and Kyurem, which...
Mew's free.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, like, just throw more powerful energy on it and knock it out. You know what I'm saying? Like...
You solve every solution by powerful energy. And also that, like, Kyurem's going to have a hard time just knocking out three of them because that... you can play Quad Path, Roxanne Barney. Yeah. You can also, like, you can one-shot one of the Kyurems, and then the second one's just going to two-shot that. And then V-Guard energy makes it so they need one more to energy attached, like the fourth one.
So it's super
strong. And you can also still play the one-prize attackers.
Correct. What's that? There's so many different variants because... If you haven't looked, just go look on PCGO and look at how many different special energies that we have in this format. Especially Aurora Energy, which just gives every Pokemon an opportunity to attack. Because you're attaching four energies in a turn for free. Like, there's not really any Pokemon that takes more than four energies to attack. Even in the craziest pile of energies, so... Like, you're, I think the one, does it take five? It might take four or five. It's the Ivolta that just knocks out a Pokemon.
It might be five.
But you can attach a turn. So, like, in one turn, you can literally just power that up and take a knockout, which is kind of insane.
If you even have the energies in hand, you could just go Marnie.
Yeah.
And then you go, boom, attach. And then...
Yeah. It's actually insane. So... I don't even, like... Well, I don't, obviously, we just have to test it and see how it goes, but in the long run, the deck... On paper, the deck just looks super broken. We had some reports in Japan that was almost 50% of the meta. The Archaeopsis, that ability is just super strong, especially with the type of energies we have in the format. Maybe... Once we have a rotation, if Aurora does leave, it might be a little more fair. I don't know if powerful... That's what's going to have to come down. You got to kind of look at rotation and see what energies disappear on us. But other than that, right now, when we go into Latin America, it's going to be super powerful. And I think a lot of people are going to find... fun ways to play it, or you're gonna have people that are gonna work really hard on trying to counter it, which we'll see if anyone's successful. I see some stuff on Twitter where people are coming up with these cards that just counter it, which, like, I think Sinnoh gets a lot better, obviously. Sinnoh Roxanne.
But Sinnoh Roxanne still doesn't do the job because, because it'll find out energy and can still attack with Lugia. So
correct.
It's not that you're 100% solving it, as well as Lugia, like, should be playing four stadiums himself plus Pokeboo. So with that, it's that, right? And Yveltal only needs three colored energy to do its attack.
Yeah.
It needs two colorless and then one lightning, one psychic, one dark, somewhere around that. You can see how stupid that is, man. Yeah. Like,
it's very
It's fire, psychic, dark, colors.
Yeah, becomes that
is busted.
I think it's busted. I think a lot of those amazing rare Pokemon become really good with that. Because we thought with Mirage Gate, oh, those cards are gonna be good. Like, no, we do this turn two. Like, we're turn two, like, knocking things out 100%. Like, turn two, 330 is like. Easy now.
Turn two, knockout.
Yeah.
Easy.
No matter what. So, like, flipping heads going first is going to be important, I think.
I think going first, or at least going second, Marnie pathing people is going to be pretty
important. You need a Marnie path for sure. You need. Again, Marnie path is always going to be good. So, like.
It's gonna be good until it rotates. Like, Path is just an inherently really powerful card, but I do like it since it keeps a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it is a comeback method coupled together, Roxanne. Which, I don't like Marnie.
I think we're gonna see a lot of upticks on ways of getting out of stadiums. So whatever that is double Punkaboo or Punkaboo and four stadiums, and just how many outs to get rid of Path or Sinnoh or whatever, that you're going to see a lot of that. And the thing is, there's a lot of options, you know? Like, you just got to put them in, which make the deck even better, because it's like, in Path, it's like, okay, like, you just play this, and then Marnie Path them, and maybe they don't draw their stadium. Well, now, a Quick Ball gets you out of it, an Ultra Ball gets you out of it. There's, like, a lot of options to get out. And there's even, like, a new supporter that, like, draw three, discards the stadium. So, like, if it does come to that, where, like, you're having such an issue with Path or Sinnohs, and you can't get through stuff, like, that card will just be starting to play, so you just have more outs to get rid of stadiums. So, I don't know. I know Gerhardt posted, like, a list of cards that counter Lugia, and I don't know, I just didn't agree on the list. I thought, so it's not, there's a lot of, like, stuff you can, I don't feel like you can just plug into decks. He's come to this whole thing about how these cards are easily plugged in, which, how you easily just plug in, friggin', what is that, Ghost Pokemon,
Oh, good question.
You know, the genie looking one. What am I talking about? Dusknoir?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know how you just, like, magically, just plug a stage 2 Pokemon into any deck, but, like, hey, more power to you if you figure that out, and I'm glad it's good in one of your matchups. And so let's put a whole stage 2 line into my deck so I can win. I mean, I guess if the meta's 50%, it's probably worth it. But if it's not, probably don't do that.
Yeah, it's going to be a cool question. I think LASC is going to be very polar tournament, whereas the tournaments afterwards is going to balance a bit out, because that's also how it goes usually with, like, the first tournament of format thing, where the strongest deck and the most anticipated deck is going to take a huge amount of slots naturally, and then we just reach a normal level at some point where it kind of thins out and it goes to a healthy level again.
It's going to be very, because normally you're right, I agree. Like, when we had the Seattle Regionals, right when Trash Lands came out, and there was like 80% or 90% of the field was like Trash Lands. But we live in a world now where there's a lot of online tournaments, and like things get, metas develop a lot quicker. It's like, oh, this works. This does beat this. We figure this out. So I'm curious to see how effective that's going to be going into the Latin America IC. If we do see like half the meta is just playing Lugia, or by the time that happens, those 2 weeks, does this online tournament reveal that, hey, Lugia does lose and you can just put Dusknoir in your deck, or you can put, I don't know, there's like some Flapple that does like 70 times something. You just tag that in there and it one shots it or something, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's something we're going to be heading on towards after LAIC. I will tell you that we should be doing a specific episode on how Lugia did at LAIC, because it's going to be really interesting towards what we're going to be seeing from people afterwards.
Yeah, because I'm going right after LAIC. I go to Toronto.
Yeah, so, I go to Stuttgart.
Yeah, so we both have stuff right after it. And then right after Toronto, I go to Dallas or Arlington, which is just Dallas, but for some reason
it's Texas.
Yeah, we hit up Texas, which, surprise, Chum might come with me to Texas. Just throwing,
let's go.
Yeah, I've been talking to him lately. I went over and he's in the buy sell trade place of Pokemon, so he's living that life. He's not playing much, but he said he wants to go, so he might head out to Texas with me. Knock on wood. Probably not now, but yeah, but December is going to be a crazy month. Like, obviously, was it the second to last week of November is LCE, or is it the last week? Second to last week, yeah.
It's the last.
Oh, it is last. So the weekend after that is Toronto, and then 2 weeks is Arlington, And then 2 weeks from then is San Diego. So we're just going to hit tournament after tournament, and then all the EU ones. Like, it's going to be nonstop. Like, we have this little break, which is nice. We have, like, these 3 weeks of breathe, play, and then it's just Pokemon for the next at least, like, 8 weeks. So get ready for that journey.
It's gonna be a grind.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to be going to a lot of this. So, but yeah, we'll see how Silver Tempest goes. We'll jump into it. But this is kind of where we're going to end it. We're going to do Monday shows. And, yeah, more consistency, a lot of Pokemon coming, guys. Hope you all enjoyed this. Follow the links down below. Twitters are down there. Like, subscribe this. Leave comments. I reply to everything, so.
And I'll make sure I'll try to.
Yeah, sure. Were you coming to any NA stuff, did you say?
I'll try my best for NA, I see.
There you go.
It depends on it. If it makes financial sense, I'll do.
Money, who talks about that stuff? We're just too, forget about that. We'll just go worry about the money afterwards.
Last season I could have, but I was like, it doesn't, like, the financial case is dumb because I already have my day two sealed.
Okay, that is dumb. But it's fun, though. And how old are you now? You're 21, no?
21, yeah.
Ah, you gotta come, man. What are you doing? NAIC is so much fun. You gotta come. All right. But yeah, we're gonna end that right here.
I'll do my best.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, for now, we're gonna scoop it up.